this is 17 years in a row, so it's a real treat. And it's always great to visit with you all and also the speakers. You pick up so many things. It's like the benefit that I've had being in Washington for the last 20 years. When you actually live there, you pick up things that you wouldn't otherwise. But fortunately, I have enough connections there now. I don't have to necessarily live there. And like I said yesterday when I introduced myself, that's the only thing that Biden administration has done. It's allowed me to move back to Dallas, which the only thing is positive. I should put it that way, positive. So it's a treat to be back, and, well, what a time that we're living. It's just an amazing day, and it's exciting. And we post news. Go back here. Yeah, our website is watch.org. Gives you an idea how long we've been on the Internet, have a website address like that. Started it here in 1996. My webmaster is still here in Plano. I've been with him for 26 years. And the Lord's really provided me with some great people to do what we do. And we're watchmen on the wall, and we're watching what's going 24/7. I have people in Europe that keep an eye on things for us, in Israel, and I got a couple of guys that do a great job. Jim Fletcher writes about the church every week. Bill Wilson, who writes the Daily Jot, who also works with the number two guy at the NFL, writes some incredible insight. He's the one that helped develop the films for the Republican convention that were award-winning. And right now he and I are working with a couple medical groups right now to help them better frame the anti-vax or anti-jab message. So I'm going to share a lot tonight that we're doing. We've never seen anything quite like what's going on with this pandemic or plandemic, I prefer calling it. Eye to Eyes, my book, it's in its third edition, over 30 printings. And it focuses on world news. Or excuse me, not world news, jumping ahead of myself. This is kind of a summary, covers Bush, Clinton, Bush, Obama, and Trump's first few months in office. And then also, I'm really jumping around here, I'm sorry. And what's interesting, in the 576 pages, we have 127 record-setting of catastrophes and events. And these are, well, we touch the land of Israel, major catastrophes happening in the United States the same day within 24 hours. I also look into every American president back to Woodrow Wilson and their relationship with the Jewish people or the state of Israel, those who were blessed, those who were not blessed, according to Genesis 12:3. Also, every Middle East leader that attempted to conquer the land of Israel, their dramatic and many times loss of life or early departure from life when they attempted to go against that covenant land. And also every Israeli prime minister that went along with the Land for Peace process and some of the government collapses that they had. It's amazing. The covenant land of Israel is not to be given up. It's not to be touched. It's not to be divided. And it's not for an Arab state to occupy the biblical heartland of Judea and Samaria. Through this process, since 2001, and this is an absolute amazing parallel that I really kind of zeroed in on last year after the beginning of the COVID crisis, is 17 days prior to 9/11, President George W. Bush was working with Crown Prince Abdullah of Saudi Arabia, what was going to be the most comprehensive address ever given by an American president at the UN pertaining to the land of Israel. For 17 days, the work was completed on 9/10. I have the Washington Post copyrighted article. Prince Bondar was in his home in McLean, Virginia on 9/10 celebrating this effort that Crown Prince Abdullah and George W. Bush had put into. And what they were going to call for is the division of Jerusalem, and they were going to call for two states living side by side in peace and security, something his dad or Bill Clinton would never, ever thought about doing. And then the next day, 9/11. And I frame this every time I talk about it, and almost every year I speak here. The God of Israel did not produce the evil of 9/11, but he did not stop it. And Prince Bondar went from celebrating and being one of the happiest men on the planet to the next day, realizing that 15 of the 19 terrorists that hit our World Trade Center and the Pentagon were Saudis. And that was the beginning of the war on terror. Life as we know it has changed dramatically because of that day. And then what's important here, the two largest catastrophes in U.S. history correspond to direct White House role in establishing an Arab state in Judea and Samaria. So the Abdullah two-state plan, and I'll go into more details here shortly, but the Trump-Kushner peace to prosperity plan was delivered at the White House on January 28th last year. It even came with a map that superimposed the map of Genesis 15-18, the land that God gave to Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob and their descendants. So those two events, the 9/11 terrorism events and the COVID crisis, has cost us $15 trillion. Both happening at the time, two-state plan of Bush and the Trump plan of a plan for the land of Israel. And in every audience I speak of, there has been no president in our history that's been a better friend of Israel than Donald Trump. He did more than every president combined. He moved, when Bush and Clinton and Obama said they're going to move the embassy to Jerusalem during campaigns, they never did it. Trump said it, and he did it. He also said Israel has the sovereign rights to the Golan Heights. And his Secretary of State Pompeo said, no, the settlement communities in Judea and Samaria are not illegal, according to the San Remo Agreement of 1920. And then he told the international criminal courts, leave Israel alone. Don't touch him. And any of your leaders that want to chastise Israel or America, you're not welcome in the United States. He backed out of the UN Human Rights Council. He shut down the Palestinian office in Washington, D.C. And he got rid of the Iran nuclear deal. He also took out the terrorist or the head of the Quds Force, Soleimani. And a friend of mine, it's a Syrian who speaks Farsi, who spent many years with the CIA and his responsibility was Iran, said taking Soleimani down is like taking the head of the CIA, the FBI, the State Department, and the Pentagon. That's how much influence Soleimani had. It devastated Khomeini. It devastated Iranians. They couldn't believe this guy who'd traveled throughout the Middle East on his own, creating havoc with much Israeli Jewish blood in his hands. Trump and his team took him down. And then ISIS, which was formed because Obama and Biden says we don't need troops in Iraq. Pentagon says we need at least a couple thousand in Iraq. No, bring them home. And then ISIS develops into this monster. And then Trump and his administration take down Baghdadi, the head of ISIS, and eliminate most of the ISIS footprint in Iraq. What President Trump has done in the Middle East, and there was no wars, and unpredictable, and even to the extent that he was having a dinner at Mar-a-Lago with the president of China. And between dinner and dessert, he sent 57 cruise missiles into Syria before dessert. Wow. I mean, he didn't even wait till the next day or even after dinner or the next day or a week later. Now, at the moment, he's having the president of China there. What a message. But unfortunately, President Trump, because of Kushner, because of his son-in-law, and because of Christians that supported the land plan, unfortunately, Joel Rosenberg, I respect Joel's work, Lance Wallnau, John Hagee, Paula White, Jensen Franklin were all supportive of the Trump Land for Peace plan. Myself and Michelle Bachmann worked very closely on warning the White House in January of 2019. And she had a meeting with 14 Christian leaders at the State Department in January of 2019 with my book, which was given to Pompeo, Kushner, and Greenblatt. And she warned them if you divide this land, if the president comes up with a plan, it could very likely cost him re-election. And after that meeting, I met her because we were going to have dinner with Paula White and her husband to reiterate this. And Jack Graham and Marcus Lamb and others, there was about 14 Christian leaders there, Jensen Franklin, they said Michelle did a fantastic job. A fantastic job. And then 5 weeks later, Kushner brought all these Christian leaders into the White House, and they all said, your deal's fantastic. It's just a wonderful deal. It's great. And, you know, Jesus Christ wants us to be a peacemaker. So all the momentum that we had building was lost. And it led to, and I'll go into some more details about the connecting of the dots. So we have two major events, 9/11 and the Peace to Prosperity Plan, both connected, corresponding to $15.7 trillion worth of damage. Quick note here, my book, Obama's Legacy, I won't go into details on that. I also wrote a book. This is 8 years of my observation of being in the White House during Obama's time in office. And I reiterate often, there's part of what he put in place that we will never recover from. I mean, we are living in the final days, so that helps us get through some of this that happened and took place. Isaiah 5:20 is the opening scripture that I had. Woe unto them that call evil good and good evil, that put darkness for light and light for darkness, that puts forth sweat or sweet and sweet for bitter. And today we have Obama 2.0. That's what we're experiencing right now, and that's why we have the havoc. But nonetheless, I'll hit that later. So I'm going to go over the Trump peace plan, the Abraham Accord curse, 2020 election update, ground game and air game, one vote Senate majority, Biden's diminishing mental capacity, Hunter Biden allegation inactions, Mr. Global pandemic, COVID truth, Israel and EU COVID crisis, and then some insight on Afghanistan, Iran and Israel, Iran and the Middle East, Russia and the Ukraine, and China and Taiwan. I wrote a commentary last year, Life in America Before January 28th, when the plan was given, and Life After. It's two distinctively different worlds. President Trump had major favor on him, on his administration. And as I share today, I mean, there's no better friend for Israel, incredible friend of Israel. And we lobbied hard, even before the election, going in other avenues besides, you know, just trying to counter it, even 2, 3, 4, 5 months trying to get things into the White House. And Michelle was one of the advisors, the Christian advisors. And no president has given the evangelical community more access than President Trump. We had Christians in his every single week. He was constantly in contact with Christian leaders, Tony Perkins and many others, and Michelle and Jim Garlow, on and on. The access was incredible. And we even did a Zoom call last year with pastors because they go, "How? What happened?" There were so many Christians praying that President Trump would be reelected. So many of us. What happened? But unfortunately, he's not in the White House now. But you're right about that. Trump's deal of the century presented with a map at the White House. As I said, this was the first time we'd had a president that actually established a map. It's the Peace to Prosperity Plan. Netanyahu says he owes Trump and Kushner an eternal debt of gratitude for the peace plan. And basically, it was going to allow Israel to have 132 Jewish communities, extended sovereignty to 132 Jewish communities, and then 70% were going to be set aside for the Palestinians for a future Palestinian state, which the Trump team, for the most part, didn't think they would ever fulfill anyhow. But unfortunately, it continued to the narrative of the two-state plan. Netanyahu called Trump the greatest friend that Israel has ever had in the White House, and I would have to agree with that. And he owes Trump and his chief negotiator and son-in-law, Jared Kushner, an eternal debt of gratitude. President Trump tweets the State of Palestine map to his 71.8 million Twitter followers that afternoon. At that time, he had 71.8 million. By the time he left office, he was at 88 million, until Michelle Obama got on national TV and said that Facebook and Twitter ought to take Trump down and actually take him down forever, and 48 hours later, Twitter took him down, Facebook took him down. At that time, he had 88 million followers. I mean, I still to this day can't comprehend that these organizations were able to do that, but they have the power to do that, which we've learned. So anyhow, he puts this map together, and within 44 minutes, the Miami's financial district was shaken by a 7.7 earthquake. What was interesting about that earthquake, it came off at a 7.3, and typically the quakes come in hot, and then they'll back them off. But this one went from a 7.3 bump to 7.7 in perfect number, 7.7. And I watch these all the times. I watch the patterns. I watch the numbers. I watch the symbolism. This was not a coincidence. 7.7 is a major earthquake between Cuba and Jamaica, but it still was so strong, it shook the Miami Financial District. Then in Peter Navarro's brand new book, In Trump Time, he went into detail, but first of all, Trump in late January played down the virus, the concerns over the coronavirus. And on January 28th, according to Navarro, a major disagreement took place between him and Fauci, Secretary Azar, and Chief of Staff Mulvaney. And Navarro's on Steve Bannon's program quite often, The War Room, and I tell you what, it's very, very informative. Bannon's unique. But I tell you what, if you want to be informed, the War Room is very, very good. They have the insight on elections, the insight on transhumanism, insight on what's taking place with the COVID vaccine. You have Dr. Malone often some of the top doctors in the country, and Navarro's on a lot. I mean, Navarro has his own style of communication, but the guy was he was right there in the mix of this. So he said, and he mentions, and you'll hear this if you watch his program, in Bannon's program, he'll mention January 28th often as a critical date in the coronavirus. Again, that was the day that Trump introduced his plan. Not a week later, a month later, or 6 months later. At this very day that Navarro was having problems with these three in the White House. And he said in Bannon's program recently, he was so perplexed. What do? We need a task force now. That's what he was calling for, and we need to stop the air travel from China. We've got all those people coming in from China. It's coming out of Wuhan. We need to stop it. But Fauci says it's no big deal. You could hear him, Azar. So Peter Navarro's memos warned of mass coronavirus death circulated. This is a way he attempted to get the president's and the National Security Council's attention. He said grim estimates were out in two memos, one January 29 and addressed the National Security Council, and the other one dated February 23rd. He circulated both memos around the White House. Navarro makes a case for immediate travel ban on China. Lays the groundwork for supplemental requests from Congress for money, because he said this is going to be very costly. So here's his memo. It says there's an increased probability the coronavirus could infect as many as 100 million Americans with 1 to 2 million deaths. This is in January of last year, and I remember I gave a presentation a month after that to a group in Southern California. At that time, we only had 64 cases in America of coronavirus. On February 29th last year, I gave a message that we only had 64 known cases in all of America. And look how the foresight that Navarro had here a month earlier, and we're getting closer and closer to 1 million, and possibly 100 million people have had coronavirus in one degree or another. And then Navarro also, in this memo, he said that aggressive containment will cost us $34.6 billion, no containment, $3.8 trillion. But we're beyond $3.8 trillion. And part of that was because of, unfortunately, Fauci and some of the other guys that weren't taking this very seriously. And Fauci said, you don't need to wear a mask. I remember Pelosi was calling Trump xenophobic because of shutting down air travel from China. So that was that part. And then we work into the summer. Israel's basically told by Kushner Don't extend sovereignty to those 132 Jewish communities. The international community and the Arab leagues were furious at Prime Minister Netanyahu because he was talking about extending sovereignty to 132 Jewish communities. At the same time, some Christian and Jewish voices in Israel were saying, Netanyahu, you're taking your eye off the ball. We've got a coronavirus crisis here. You better just leave this extended sovereignty thing on the table. You need to work out a deal with the United Arab Emirates, Bahrain, and they were talking to Saudis and a couple others. So unfortunately, Netanyahu said, okay, 132 Jewish communities, I'm sorry, we can't give you sovereignty right now. We'll get to you later. And on September 15th last year, the Abraham Accords was signed at the White House. Hurricane Sally had been working its way up the Gulf Coast and was about to come on shore the day that Trump welcomed Netanyahu and the leaders of Bahrain and United Arab Emirates to the White House, the same day. And this storm backed down to about 2 miles per hour and was gaining a massive amount of rain and moving slowly. And you can see in the screen right down here or up in the top corner, the news that day was Trump at the White House with Netanyahu, and in the corner is Hurricane Sally. The next day, Kushner was on all the national TV networks talking about what they had just accomplished, this great deal that called the Abraham Accords. And the same thing again, Sally's up in the corner sharing Kushner's interviews on all the major networks. What's interesting, one of my readers wrote, do you know that Sally is a derivative of Sarah? I said, I didn't realize that. Because a lot of times these names have a significance. I said, no, I didn't know that. And I thought to myself, wow, Abraham Accords, Sarah, the God of Israel, could allow this to be called a lot of other things, but it was called Sarah, and the Lord put in my heart, that land is for Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, and their descendants, Sarah's descendants, not Ishmael and Hagar, Hagar and Ishmael. Because that's the thought process today, Abraham Accords. This land's for all descendants of Israel. And that's part of the narrative today. I had a quick debate with the head of the ELCA, the Lutheran Church. He says, that land's for all of them. I said, no, it's not. That land is not for all the descendants. Let me give you some scriptures that say otherwise. But anyhow, I'll get to that just after this slide. Israel goes into a national lockdown, signing at the White House on September 15th. One of the motivations for Israel to cut a deal with the Emirates and with Bahrain, especially the Emirates, who have a $25-30 billion sovereign fund, is money. A half billion to a billion a year in the first few years. So what happens? Netanyahu signs this at the White House, and he goes home. And Israel goes into a three-week lockdown because of coronavirus that cost the country $5 billion. It's going to take a little while to make up that money that they lost. But the timing, Rosh Hashanah, Yom Kippur, and Sukkot, Israel's in a total extreme lockdown because their coronavirus cases were so disruptive. The Abraham Accord, in my estimation, we hear about the positive things. Yes, Israel's making friends with their Arab countries. Well, they already had a good relationship with the Emirates. A lot of people didn't know it. Bahrain as well. Israel shares a lot of intel with these countries, but this was formal. And Kushner and some of the Christian leaders thought this would be important for Trump going into the election, that he was able to make some kind of peace deal. It's really more of a normalization deal, not a peace deal, because they weren't at war with these countries. But anyhow, the problem with the Abraham Accord, it stopped the extended sovereignty of 134 Jewish communities. It continued the two-state false narrative and continued the UN resolutions 242 and 348 that calls for Israel to go back to the 1967 lines. with swaps, and also the division of Jerusalem, those UN resolutions, and mentions the Arab peace plan of 2002. So it keeps that alive. It keeps the UN resolution alive, that came, the 242 that came after the Six-Day War, the 348 which came after Yom Kippur, and then the Arab peace plan of 2002. But here's the scriptures. The Abrahamic covenant and land covenant applies only to Isaac and his seed. It's an everlasting covenant, as you all know. The land which he gave Abraham and Isaac, the land is an everlasting possession. Israel's land's not to be sold or exchanged, and Isaac and his seed is the heir, not Ishmael. Galatians 4, 22 through 31. Okay, now we'll go into the election 2020. Obviously and unfortunately, the coronavirus allowed mail-in voting. It also allowed Mark Zuckerberg of Facebook to spend $450 million putting voting booths in key Democratic areas to get that vote out, but didn't put it in Republican areas. Technically, what he and David Plyth, who was Obama's campaign guru, this was their plan to get as many votes as they could for Biden. And there are some people that I've talked to that received 3, 4, 5 ballots in the mail. And I can tell you, I followed this very closely. Bannon and Mike Lindell have done a good job. Bannon calls it ground game, which is the audits of the states. And the air game is Mike Lindell's forensic audits. Arizona went through a very comprehensive audit. But unfortunately, 3 of the 4 county supervisors in Maricopa County are Republicans, and they are reluctant to allow the machines to be looked at and the truth to come out. And what's happened in all these states, we don't have backbone in these state legislatures. And part of it has been they saw the BLM riots during last summer, and some of them, the United States, especially the blue cities, the major blue cities, were locked down for election night. And if Trump wins, we were going to have riots all across the country. So this intimidated a lot of our legislatures in key states. All these states have a Republican majority in the legislature. Pennsylvania has a Democratic governor, which creates some challenges there. We know the situation in Georgia with a Republican governor and a Republican Secretary of State that haven't helped Trump at all. But every state, Georgia, according to Reince Priebus, former Republican National Committee chairman from Wisconsin, says that's probably the lowest hanging fruit is probably Wisconsin, the easiest to prove. And we have a Republican former judge that's heading it up in Georgia, but we can't get anywhere. We can't get anywhere in Arizona still. Pennsylvania is probably the biggest fraud of anywhere. Georgia, they were getting real close to do an audit of Fulton County, and the lawyers stopped that, and then Michigan. Late-night dumps of hundreds of thousands of ballots. But here's Perkins and Coy is the Democrats' chief lawyers. They're very savvy, and they're going around in every state stopping any progress with legal maneuvers. And this is happening state after state. So that's why this is not going anywhere. And there's hope that some of this stuff will eventually go somewhere, but there's very likely this will get done before the midterm. The main thing now is to make sure that the next election is done fairly and watch closely. I mean, I've been living in Virginia for 20 years, and that was a remarkable news that happened on Election Day here in Virginia for Youngkin to be victorious. We had Republican poll watchers throughout the state, and in every precinct. It was incredible. But the our church, Cornerstone Chapel, there in Leesburg, was on the front line of the Loudoun County problem with the critical race, with the transgender and all that battle and the education battle. But the fact that Youngkin won, matter of fact, our pastor gave the opening prayer for the night that he accepted his acknowledged his victory. Winsome Sears, a wonderful lady. She's lieutenant governor. She went to Regent University, got her master's there, loves Jesus. The attorney general is a Hispanic Christian. So, you know, we still have hope. But I tell you one thing, this definitely scared the Democrats going into the midterms. But our concern is the amount of damage that they do between now and the election. Because I think it's going to be overwhelming. The Republicans are going to win should win the House and Senate with good candidates. That's important. I think we'll do fine, and that will make things very difficult. But the bottom line on the elections, the audits, they could probably keep this in court for a long time. We've all had hope that some things could happen, but it's going to take a while. This Perkins Coie group with 100 well-positioned attorneys will make sure of that. The Georgia runoff cost the Republicans a majority in the Senate. Perdue and Ossoff and Loeffler and Warnock. I was emailing back and forth with a good friend of mine in Atlanta about 11:30 to 12:30 the night of that election. And when I turned in for the night, Perdue was ahead and Loeffler was ahead. Not by much. And then I woke up in the morning and Ossoff and Warnock were both now and ahead. And Lindell thinks the votes came in from Pakistan. And I think he's going to try to present that with his audit here soon. But something happened. It appears to happen because, and they wake up in the morning and both these Ossoff and Warnock are ahead. You know, somewhat of a pattern that repeated itself. But what's important here is McConnell, Thune, and Cornyn didn't support Trump's election challenge. They didn't. And I think Karl Rove even convinced them, hey, we got enough Republican support in Georgia. We don't need to back Trump in his election challenge. Well, you know what that did? Kept about 25% of Trump's supporters in Georgia at home. They were furious. They said, okay, fine. Okay, if you're going to treat us that way and act like we don't exist, then fine. Just think of what that one. If we could have just won one of those two, the Republicans would still have the majority in the Senate and could have stopped a lot of what has happened. Just one. And most of us understand, too, that, you know, we in this country right now, God could have allowed that to happen. He could have allowed us to have the majority. But unfortunately, there's judgment associated with this as well. I think to a certain extent, this is judgment. We're going through it. We hate it. I hate to see it. And I tell you what, being in Washington with this kind of, with the Democrats controlling the House and the Senate and the White House is not fun. It's not a good experience. Republicans don't have all the answers, but I can tell you there are some things that are opposed to our Judeo-Christian values that would not have gotten through if we just had the majority in the Senate or could have stopped some things. Biden's diminishing mental capacity. I won't go into a lot of details here, but I think all of us are seeing this. And, you know, I get the question all the time, who's in control? Well, I heard that Obama gave Biden 50 executive orders to implement the day he took office. And you could see Biden's first 2 weeks, he was in a frantic, put out as many executive orders and reversed as many Trump things as he could. And he was frantic. Biden and Harris don't get along well. It's even rumored that Joe Biden is looking on how do we get rid of Kamala Harris with the 25th Amendment. You know, that's supposed to be for the president, but how do we remove her? How do we remove her? And I don't know what's going to happen. Only God knows what's going to happen there. But what a time to have the leadership of Biden and Harris with so many international risks that I'll get to a little bit later. I want just no reason to go into more details. You all are informed on that. Hunter Biden revelations and nothing is done. This is something that's so perplexing. We had these revelations before the election. Bill Barr, as Attorney General, did nothing. FBI Director Wray did nothing. The FBI had their hands on this back in December 2019 and nothing was done. Many former defense and State Department officials stated before the 2020 election that Hunter Biden allegations were Russian disinformation. It was a large, it was a 50, 60, maybe more than that. I remember it. I don't have the exact number, but they came out saying, no, this is Russian misinformation. And of course, all the mainstream media was right there with the same narrative. And if his name was Trump, he would be in prison today for life. Jim Jordan today says we need to get on this now, on the Hunter Biden situation. We need to get to the bottom of this now because of a lot of state secrets, a lot of compromised relationships. Pandemic. I covered this last year briefly. Some people say this isn't a pandemic. This is as much as a plandemic. In Event 201, October 18, 2019, the Gates Foundation, the Rockefeller Foundation, the Johns Hopkins University, and the World Economic Forum put on an event in the event of a pandemic. It was kind of a 3.5-hour pandemic exercise. What do we do in the event of a pandemic? 90 days later, or thereabouts, a little bit longer than that, we had a pandemic of magnitude that we've never, ever seen on Earth. Then we hear from Klaus Schwab, the Great Reset, 2030. Vaccine passports, we hear about that. Universal basic income, we hear about that. And I'll go into more details here shortly. Trillion-dollar companies, Google, Microsoft, Amazon, Facebook, Apple, Tesla, and NVIDIA have all seen their market capitalization in the last 20 months increase by $6 trillion on top of where they were already. These companies are all trillion-dollar companies now, and they're all going to have a very significant role going forward, as we see, and as I'll share with you shortly. Klaus Schwab, the head of the World Economic Forum, says the pandemic represents a rare but narrow window of opportunity to reflect, reimagine, and reset our world. How do you herd all the sheep into the slaughterhouse without them realizing and resisting? This is Catherine Austin Fitz's comment. She said that was the war on terror and the coronavirus crisis. The war on terror, we gave up a lot of rights and gave the government a lot of privileges to protect us. And the coronavirus crisis, we're seeing a lot of our individual rights as targets. Catherine Austin Fitz also said, don't underestimate the ability of the leadership to introduce a pathogen that could kill people. Catherine Austin Fitz used to be a Wall Street person. She was the assistant HUD secretary during George Herbert Walker Bush's time in office. You can put her name on, it's actually a C, Catherine with a C. You can put her name into Google, and she has some really, really good insight. And she's a very strong Christian, very, very effective. I've learned she probably explains the One World Order as well as I've seen, and I've read a lot of them. But it's just very easy to understand. I'll share some of this here shortly. COVID-19 is the institution of control necessary to convert the planet from a democratic process to technocracy. Central bankers, system transformation challenges. Essentially, all the money on the planet, it's big, complicated, and messy. And we heard, I haven't confirmed this yet, about 3-4 weeks ago, the central banks, when they met in Europe, on the heels of the big climate conference, that they have determined that they need $130 trillion of all the central banks to commit to that, to wipe out all the debt, and to move into a digital future. The Federal Reserve System and the Fed coin. Fitz said that at the recent IMF meeting that they were talking about global currencies and digital currencies, and the IMF lady basically slipped and talked about how it would play out, and Powell of the Federal Reserve was uncomfortable with the fact that she was explaining so much at this early time because they like to do things in the shadows. Digital transhumanism hooked up to the financial system physically. The cryptocurrency system uses body activity data. And I love how the Lord gives us messages. I mean, the last six numbers of the Microsoft patent is 060606. I love the messaging. Thank you, Lord. And what this does is it's something you insert into your body, and your body detects if you work 4 hours, and then at the end of the day, it goes up into the system, and your bank account will receive cryptocurrency or currency for the 4 hours you work that day based on what your body sent to the system. The quantum dot tattoo Bill Gates funded. It started at MIT, then it went to Rice, and they came up with a quantum dot tattoo to determine if you've taken a vaccine or not. Hasn't been implemented yet, but it's ready to go when they decide to put it in place. The digital passport. And, boy, we see this happening quickly in Europe where you're not going to be able to do anything, go anywhere, fly, go into restaurants, go to grocery stores. And right now grocery stores and pharmacies are okay, but it's happening there quickly. I have a friend in Cisco Management in Munich, and he says, unfortunately, our company's working on a lot of this technology to make these things possible. He's a Christian friend from Calvary Chapel Herborn just outside of Frankfurt. Digital ID. You know, you wonder sometimes, is this obsession with tattoos and marking your skin and things like that, and, you know, it's just like in the young people, it seems not to be an issue at all, whether it's implants. I mean, what the pain they go through to get tattoos and the digital ID and moving in that direction. I don't know, there has to be some kind of parallel there. Facial recognition. This is something that the biometrics, even when we were checking into Israel the last few years, you know, using biometrics to recognize, you know, your eyes and everything. This is happening. Your face is or will be your boarding pass. They promise both more security and efficiency in moving travelers through an airport. Whereas steps from check-in to boarding, passengers are normally required to show government-issued photo IDs. And security, efficiency, that's the catch. That's the way you're going to catch a lot of people. It's going to make your life more secure, more efficient, and more protective. Elon Musk said Neuralink hopes to start implanting brain chips in humans in 2022, later than he anticipated, developing a chip that would be implanted in people's brains to simultaneously record and stimulate brain activity. That's just the beginning. In April, Neuralink released a video of a monkey playing a video game using a Neuralink device. It's just incredible that we're living in a time such as this, but it is. Microsoft, Amazon, and Leidos have three major cloud contracts. Well, first of all, Amazon has, most of us have used Amazon, so they have a lot on us already. Plus, for us that go to Whole Foods, they have a lot of on our eating habits. Microsoft has sold us a lot of software, and Leidos does a lot of government contracts, but the Department of Defense JEDI cloud contract was $10 billion. And it was awarded to Microsoft, and Amazon complained, so the Department of Defense decided to give $5 billion to Microsoft, $5 billion to Amazon, Amazon Web Services. Amazon essentially is a CIA contractor and for 17 U.S. agencies. National Security Agency, or the NSA, quietly just awarded a contract worth up to $10 billion to Amazon Web Services, and Microsoft is protesting. And Leidos was just awarded a $7.7 billion contract for next-generation Navy Marine data networks. Once everybody is hooked to these three cloud entities, you have the ability to radically engineer how cash flow works. You can literally shut down almost any small business and put everybody in a universal basic income, which is where Klaus Schwab's and the World Economic Forum people are going, that at one point, you know, why don't you just give all your property to the state and we'll make sure you have so much money given to you every single month. And a lot of people will go along with that. Probably the less productive members of our country, our societies, our countries, our communities will be in favor of that. And technology gives you the ability to institute a complete control system and further centralize economic and political control, which is the great concern. Catherine calls it, Mr. Global now is implementing robotics, new tech to make an enormous difference. Hook everyone into a crypto system or some type of digital system. You'll need a database with software. A satellite system is key, able to track and monitor humans and robots 24/7. Technocracy, a human is natural resource and to be used as such. Create a separate civilization, not part of our civilization. Technology gives a small group of people, a lot of control. Develop biotech opportunity for people to live 150 years. Joe Allen, who's on Bannon from time to time, he's their transhumanism expert, said that not a week goes by that Mark Zuckerberg with Facebook does not consider his life extension to a point of obsession. How do I extend my life? That's the transhumanism thing. The head of Google, both the guys that head up Google, Elon Musk. These leaders, these very wealthy leaders, are concerned. And I remember Martin Erdman, a friend of mine from Germany, who wrote books. He, Christian, had, I think, two PhDs, a couple master, I mean, just like 5 or 6 degrees. He was hired by the Swiss government years ago to do a study on nanotechnology and the things he, I mean, 600-page report for the government and the things he saw. That's when he started warning about transhumanism. Chuck Missler used to have Martin on quite a bit. Martin and I did a conference in Germany in at Calvary Chapel Airborne years ago, about 10 or 11 years ago, and Martin gave his message on transhumanism in German to this German crowd, and half the people walked out. They couldn't they couldn't receive it. It was hard for most, and I haven't talked much about it or gene editing and things like that because, you know, we haven't been ready for it. But this has all been working on. This is all being worked behind the scenes, gene editing, extension of life, transhumanism, taking your very being and putting into a machine that will live forever. This whole transformation is taking place in levels of sophistication I couldn't even begin to understand or explain. But nonetheless, these are final days, so I'm not too concerned about that. But hopefully God will take us out before some of this stuff really gets bad. And I think it will once we're gone. Downsize the population, integrate robots, and use them for everything. That's one concern about this coronavirus is the downsizing of the population. And we've heard a lot of this genocide. And I think that's probably one of the most nefarious parts of this whole coronavirus thing. I'm working on that right now. Supposedly there's some writings about how much each country should be reduced. But I know the rapture will reduce, take us down quite a bit here in America. Hopefully the more will take a lot with us. Mr. Global uses technology to move to a system of robotics, software, and artificial intelligence. A few people can control many with far less headaches. So that's what it really is, a few people controlling the world through technocracy. But, as Catherine says, Mr. Global is very afraid of the general population. But she does emphasize they have a one-way mirror. They can see you, but you can't see them. That's a problem with all this stuff. You know, knowing everywhere. I mean, we have cameras everywhere right now. Everywhere you go, whether it's your credit card, you know, whether it's your cell phone. I mean, they know, not like we're a big threat to them. If we were, that's fine. But they could track any one of us pretty much if they wanted to. So you have to be stealth to a certain extent. I don't know how you quite do that, but it would be favorable. But a majority of people have been supporting and financing it, you know, out of convenience and security, unbeknown to most. Building a financial system and the power to stop it. Bring transparency where it's going to stop building it. Building a financial system and the power to stop it. In other words, if you behave, you'll keep getting your money through the Fed. You'll keep getting your FedCoin money. If you do some things that they're not happy about or take some of our Christian, Judeo-Christian positions, they could shut off our money. That's a concern. And that's what's going to happen in China first. China, you want to watch what could come to here. Watch what's happening in China. And I'll get to that shortly. But that's the deal. Right now, the Federal Reserve is buying billions and billions of dollars of home loans every month Today, the Federal Reserve has 30% of the home mortgages in the United States. 30%. That gives them a lot of power. She goes, stop banking J.P. Morgan and go to local banks and credit unions. Choices between a transhumanism slavery system or the human system. Good map of where the transhumanist system is being built. She's be aware of that. And that's what we attempt to do, is help you understand to a certain extent is how it's being built. And we'll hit it tonight and get a pretty good handle, but there's much more that we can get to and get into. Don't help the military build Operation Warp Speed. Don't help tech guys figure out how to inject nanoparticles in your body and hook them up to a cloud. Don't help Big Pharma make injections that are poisoning young American children to death. Don't help Big Ag produce GMO foods that are poisoning young Americans to death. Don't let government institute health crisis situations. And she says there's 325 million people in the U.S. and a lot of guns. The new administration will likely attempt to go after those, but, you know, they're going to have their hands full. And some of my friends in Europe and Australia that I talked to said, you all are blessed to have your guns. We don't have many. They've been trying to take guns away from people in Australia for 20 years. We have them, however God decides for us to use them, but it does definitely give us some leverage. I won't go into details. I certainly don't want to go into details. But anyhow, the Chinese have a social credit system, so they have their people all in the credit system. You receive a number. A complete digital control system of people. They tied the financial system and abilities to travel into behavior. Most people under 24/7 surveillance. Their financial incentives and financial powers depend on how well they behave. You behave, you can get your money, keep getting your money. If you don't, we'll shut you off. It's a slave system. There's no personal freedom. Technocracy will drive us into a similar system, misbehave and pay the consequences. Allowed to move 10 miles from your home, to fly, pecking order to your freedoms, access to resources, systems to automate everything that must be harder to share in the benefits of the system. And then they have these monster computers that have everybody. And then, you know, China has, I think, 1.1 to 1.3 billion people. And this is the way it'll operate. As I get ready to move into more about the coronavirus, Tony Fauci, well, first of all, I think everybody in this room knows that Tony Fauci is a big problem. Huge problem. He's got blood on his hands. The real Anthony Fauci, written by Robert F. Kennedy Jr. I have friends that started reading it already. I have all these books, but I have the first two. I don't have the third. I haven't had a chance to start reading them yet. But this gives you an idea of Fauci's influence. Robert F. Kennedy Jr. and Naomi Wolf, Democrats that are now siding with the conservatives, saying enough is enough. Naomi Wolf's Jewish. She's on Bannon a lot. She's doing some great work. She's been predicting everything that's been happening in Europe 6, 7, 9, 8, 9 months ago. And she was in tears this week when I saw her. Just, you know, she had family members in the Holocaust, and she sees what's happening in Germany and Austria, and she was in tears. I mean, had tears, continued to speak. But Trump Time goes into all the details about Fauci and Big Pharma and the challenge they had. You know, March of last year, Teva from Israel, which is the largest producer of hydroxychloroquine in the world, gave Trump 10 million tabs. He said, we have another 6 million behind it. Bayer of Germany also offered to. And then Lancet, the 100-year-old health magazine in Britain, came out and bashed hydroxy. Dr. McCullough said later the whole article was fraudulent, paraphrasing, but he said it was not accurate. It was a hit piece. And when that came out, hydroxy got a bad name. I mean, we could have literally, at that point, hit provided hydroxy, which is pennies, for the American public, and probably stopped that pandemic at that point. Hydroxy is incredibly effective. It's helped many people I know. I have doctors. I'm on a weekly Zoom call with one doctor group and another doctor group monthly. Hydroxy and ivermectin, and the important thing of building up your immune system is critical. Hydroxy is important in the first 5 days if a person gets COVID. That first 5 days, hit it hard, 400 milligram. I mean, your doctor can help you. There's on our website, watch.org, we have doctor's advice on the protocols, what to do, how to do it, what to take. Vitamin D is critical. Even Dr. Ryan Cole, a pathologist, Mayo Clinic trained from Idaho, said he thinks vitamin D, a strong level of vitamin D alone, is one of the best defenses against the coronavirus. So there's a lot of details here. Trump and also Scott Atlas, who was another medical advisor to Trump. And unfortunately, Hatfield, Fauci, and Birx, Dr. Birx, said if one's fired, we're all fired. So that they pretty much intimidated Trump to the point that we got a pandemic here. If one goes, all three goes, we're going to lose our whole team. So the details are in these three books if you have any interest. But what a picture. This is sent to me a couple days ago. This is a great article. Research game changer. Spike, you know, this article, I haven't read the full article, but what I read is very detailed. Research game changer. Spike protein increases heart attacks and destroys the immune system. And that's what happens is when you take the mRNA, it can overproduce the spike proteins that can, your natural immune system is superior. And if you read the Moderna website, it says it's a new operating system. In other words, we have helped boost your natural immune system because alone it's not effective in taking care of this itself. So if you do overdo it in the spike protein, you get a cytokine storm, and then it overwhelms your body and can lead to myocarditis or pericarditis. And also the concern is the microclots, and that it will affect your immune system. See, we're only like 10 months into this. We have no history here. Because no animal testing was done, and we had no testing. This is an experimental product that's still in emergency use authorization that will protect the companies from liability. And this thing they approved recently—that's not even—that's BioNTech out of Germany. It's not even in use here in the United States right now. But the mainstream media let everybody believe that the FDA approved this jab, the Pfizer jab. That's not true. The world's first vaccine murder case against Bill Gates was filed in India's high court last week. Don't know if this will go anywhere, but it says that the deceased took the Covishield vaccine, which is made by AstraZeneca, and Bill Gates was involved with this wealthy Indian. And they believed in the false narrative that the vaccine is completely safe, and also owing to the compliance requirements set by the railway, that only double vaccinated people could be allowed to travel. But this report exposes the falsity of the claim made by the vaccine syndicate. The vaccines are actually they are totally safe, which they're not. And this young man lost his life. We're going to see a lot more of these. But it's not easy right now. It's a battle in the hospitals between parents and, it's a battle in the hospitals right now between the hospital administrators and public doctors. And the hospitals are going with their protocol. Unfortunately, it's set down by the CDC and FDA, and it's created a lot of problems. I won't go into detail about that now, but there's a real tension. One of the groups, Health for Life, that I work with, Truth for Health that I help out of Tucson, they have attorneys in 10 states right now that are suing hospitals over proper care, and it's a battle. It's a literal battle for every single soul in some of these hospitals. But prayer, keeping your immune system strong, doing everything you can, and having a strategy if you need it. But the main thing is keep that immune system as healthy as possible. George Soros and Bill Gates, back consortium, just bought a UK maker of COVID tests for $41 million. Dr. Vandenbosch. This is Gert Vandenbosch from the Belgium, but he also works out of Germany. He said previous testing of potential vaccines for SARS killed the lab animals. Pfizer said the mRNA has 94% efficacy in the test. When it first came out, that was a promotion. We have 90%, 94% efficacy. Well, in 90 days, it was 64%. In 180 days, it was 26%. This is in Israel. It waned quickly. Dr. Malone said it's how quick it waned was a shocker. But this was the promotion. Moderna 94, 93%, so is Pfizer. Those who've been jabbed have more potential to be super spreaders, according to Dr. Bosch, more than the unjabbed. According to Dr. Bosch, the breakout among young people had to do with lockdowns and mask wearing. He said this in March, and I shared this with my news report readers, that the next breakout will be the young people in the country. That is who's going to, because their natural immunity was compromised by having to wear masks and then being in lockdowns rather than being where they should be in schools and playgrounds and wherever else they needed to be. And sure enough, that's what gave Fauci the excuse to get jabs into five-year-olds. Dr. McCullough from Dallas, a cardiologist. Boy, I tell you, you talk about a wonderful man. You talk about this is a hero. He's on Laura Ingraham frequently. Tucker Carlson's interviewed him. He's done so many interviews. And he's had to spend $100,000 in legal fees because Baylor sued him. Because he used to work for Baylor Medicals. $100,000 he's had to spend. Dr. Corey, who came up with ivermectin, and one other doctor, I'll think of it in a second, but Dr. Corey just got let go of his third hospital. He's the guy that testified to Senator Johnson's committee on the benefit of ivermectin. He just let go. He's an emergency room doctor who talked about the benefits, and Dr. Merrick, he just got let go in Virginia. Dr. McCullough says a vial of injection sends RNA instructions that go into every cell to tell it to make spike protein. But it's not actually a vaccine. There's no protection against COVID. Vaccines protect you against the disease. Studies are finding spike proteins circulating throughout the body. A true vaccine stays in the deltoid muscles, and it develops an immune response, and that immune response moves to the body. But the mRNA, 25% stays where the injection takes place, and 75% spreads to every cell in your body. And the more jabs, the worse it gets. If you've had COVID, no need to get jabs. Dr. McCullough and his wife had serious cases of COVID, and they have high antibody levels, but the CDC and the FDA give no benefit at all for those that have had COVID that have good, solid, natural antibodies. McCullough says he has them for life. Dr. Malone, he's the gentleman that developed the mRNA. He had both. I mean, he was a virologist. He said he took both of the Moderna jabs, and he is not favoring them now. He had some negative reactions. Yeah, high blood pressure and some other issues that he had. I can't remember exactly, but high blood pressure was one, yes. He said the Omicron variant is a fake panic that is leading Biden and others to promote booster shots. He said the boosters are perfect ways to basically bias our immune system so we're even less able to respond to the new variants. This jabbing of everybody with a flu vaccine, it's the equivalent of jabbing everybody with a flu vaccine from three seasons ago. And he says that's what's the problem with it right now. The boosters right now that are going in people's arms were for the original coronavirus, the alpha and the beta. He said in the UK, a similar situation, this just came out and this was in Lancet. A similar situation shows among citizens of 60 years or older, the fully vaccinated account for 89.7% of the SARS cases versus 3.4% among the unvaccinated. See, we're trying to get that out. And I know medical people, they always, Biden and all of these people are blaming the unvaccinated for the spread of these things. And here's an example right there in this report that I'll have up on our website probably tomorrow. He has everything documented and the sources. He said out of Israel, a report reports a nosocomial outbreak involving 16 healthcare workers, 23 exposed patients, and 2 family members. The source was a fully vaccinated COVID-19 patient. The vaccination rate was 96.2% among the 248 people were exposed. 96% vaccine rate. Out of the 240 people, 14 fully vaccinated patients became severely ill or died, and 2 unvaccinated patients developed mild disease. He also said, and this we've been following this very closely, the high vaccinated countries outbreak, the U.S. Center for Disease Control identified 4 of the top 5 countries with the highest percentage of fully vaccinated population as high transmission countries now. So 4 of the 5 that had the most vaccinated or jabbed individuals have the highest transmission rates at this point. And he also said the initial analysis of the Omicron variant is it's less virulent and more, but it is more transmissible. He said the current vaccines won't be effective, and he favors for people that have very serious 65 plus health issues. You need to talk with your doctor and decide whether to take it or not. In some cases, because of comorbidities, you have to be careful. But in some cases, it's something that needs to be done to keep people out of hospitals and possibly even death. There's very little death in the under the 65. There's some, but very few. And he says that he believes there's going to be many breakthrough cases of the fully vaccinated individuals, and it's going to become a norm with the Omicron variant. And he says also this variant, it supposedly has 50 variants, 50 mutations associated with it. And right now, some of the people that that are experts in genome said that this is very unusual, it came out of Botswana, and Botswana has a tight relationship with China, and they're very concerned right now that this could have been planted. Don't know it. But that's one of his concerns, and they're going to research it more. And that's been a concern, but he said that it's just very unusual. This Omicron's very unusual. And the timing of it's very unusual, about the time Europe is getting ready to do some serious lockdowns. And it appears to be grossly negligent to ignore the vaccinated population as a possible and relevant source. He says the problem is, it's the people that are getting jabbed or vaccinated, there's no thought that they could be the spreaders and shedders right now, where a lot of us believe that that's exactly the case, and even Lancet magazine's talking about that. So hopefully we'll get there. But we have, unfortunately, Fauci and the people here, CDC, FDA, are fixated on trying to get a jab in as many people's arms as possible. That's according to Dr. McCullough and also by obvious observation. Emergency use authorization gives companies liability cover. The recent FDA approval was not the existing Pfizer-Moderna vaccine, and there's no public or private medical discussion. This is a concern. I'm going to kind of zip through the rest of this when I hit Europe because we can move on to some other subjects. But a big concern of Dr. McCullough, Dr. Harvey Reich from Yale, who have been on Laura Ingraham and Tucker, is there's no public or private medical discussion or debate. They don't want to hear the doctors that oppose these jabs. They don't want to have meetings. They don't want to discuss it. They don't want to do it in an open forum. Senator Johnson has these hearings in Capitol Hill, they never send anybody. They ask Senator Johnson, they ask the White House, they ask the CDC, they ask the FDA, send some people. But they don't. And this is infuriating, but look how many people have followed this protocol have followed this agenda, and we get no answer out of the CDC or FDA outside of just saying misinformation. No public voice is countering Fauci's comments or assertion. Dr. McCullough said this at Ingram, or Ingram. He's the voice. We don't have multiple voices. We have one voice that's suspect and dishonest. And unfortunately, he shouldn't be where he is right now. He should be gone, and he should be... Yep. Adverse reactions. FAERS is the vaccine adverse event reporting system that's completely flawed. It's very time-consuming. I hear doctors that I watched a program today, a press program. A doctor said that she just got let go from the hospital because she was talking about the use of ivermectin. She says she has 72 VAERS forms to file, and they said forget about them. Just forget about them. Leave. We want you to leave. Told her to leave the hospital. She's no longer employed. The VAERS system doesn't include the accurate numbers of death and vaccines injuries associated with the jabs. Now it's take the jab or lose your job. Hydroxy the first 5 days, as I mentioned, very little said by health officials on building one's immune system. You never hear about building one's immune system by any of these people. Never. COVID propaganda to denigrate and belittle those who have died or had health crises from vaccines and those who have opposed the vaccines. The focus of the mainstream media is like the conservatives that refuse to take the jabs, that unfortunately have died. And a lot of times there's comorbidities, obesity, diabetes, and other issues. Those who oppose mRNA jabs are called spreaders of misinformation. Mainstream media calls ivermectin a horse dewormer. Joe Rogan, fortunately, has a huge following. He used ivermectin, and he was furious that all the mainstream media said that Joe Rogan uses horse dewormer for COVID. And he was furious. Ivermectin won a Nobel Prize. It's been applied over 4 billion people worldwide with hardly any negative responses. It's a miracle drug. And it gets coined as a horse dewormer. Well, they have a human version too, but you don't hear that. Reuters chairman is a Pfizer investor. Reuters and Associated Press dominate the news. They provide news to most major news organizations. The chairman, James Smith, is a top investor and board member for Pfizer. CNBC advisor Scott Gottlieb is a Pfizer board member and former commissioner to the FDA. He serves a weekly pro-vax comment or pundit on TV. Today he said, very likely the booster will protect you against Omicron. Thank you. I said it too many times. Well, I tell you something. These are just some of my observations. Most people who oppose jabs are very informed. The most informed people are those that oppose it. The jab are mostly uninformed, and they don't want to know anything. And some who have been jabbed regret it. One other note here. There's this attitude, the FDA and CDC is not going to give us something that's going to harm us. They haven't before. Well, they don't, you know, Robert F. Kennedy Jr. talks about that in his book about all the harmful vaccines. So this is the attitude. Unfortunately, this has created division in the home, church, and office. The elderly are being pressured to get jabbed to be with loved ones. Bible study groups and churches are being divided between the jabbed and unjabbed. I talked to a lady in Virginia a couple months ago, and she said there's 35 in her Bible study. We've been together for 30 years, and it's now split down the middle. The jabbed meet with the jabbed, and the unjabbed meet with the unjabbed. A Bible study of 30 years, 35 people, it's now split. Churches split. In the Northeast, we still have a third of our churches in the Northeast still aren't even meeting. Our church in Leesburg, three packed out services, no masks, elbow to elbow for months, no breakout. 2,000 people a service. The atmosphere in offices and schools is tense between the jab and unjab. You've heard what they put Naval Academy students through, or the West Point students, or the people that are in the military. Patients are not being allowed to be with loved ones in the ECU. those who have been jabbed by the majority of our armed forces have received jab. I'll go through this quick. A high percentage of Democrats are jabbed. In 75 days since Biden announced the vaccination requirement by the federal government, it's achieved 96.5% of our federal government employees are now jabbed. 92% of the employees have received at least one COVID vaccine dose. Defense. This is from Defense One. As of Monday, 92% of the Marines are fully vaccinated. 95% have received at least one shot. The Navy, on November 24th, officially reported a fully vaccinated 97%. And those that are not are under extraordinary pressure. And thankfully, the Fifth Circuit, the Sixth Circuit, and another court in Georgia today says enough. Stop it. Stop the pressure. It's fortunately the courts. Trump put some good judges in place, and they've been very helpful in this process. But unfortunately, over 90% of the people have already received it. Today, 37% of the U.S. is unjabbed. Pew Research Center found that only 57% of white evangelical Protestants have received at least one shot, 86% of Hispanic Catholics, 79% of white Catholics, 73% of white non-evangelicals, 70% of black evangelicals. Now the target is children under 12, 48 million people in that age group. 72 million people are older than 12 and therefore eligible to get vaccinated. Younger Americans are the largest share of the unvaccinated population. Okay, I won't go there. Okay, I'll pop this. This is quick. This is important. The Pfizer CEO, Bourla, who is a Jew from Thessalonica, Greece, who cut the deal with Netanyahu. I mean, this is a guy. Netanyahu said, let us be your test lab, is what they're saying. We have medical records. We're the perfect place. Make sure we get all the vaccines possible. Had 30 phone conversations, as I mentioned, to make sure that Israel got the jabs, the first, and could be a test lab. Mr. Bourla the other day said, people who spread misinformation on COVID-19 vaccines are criminals. Well, the accuser is accusing others of what he is doing himself. They are criminals because they have literally cost millions of lives. He said life for many people can go back to normal once making of the unvaccinated get vaccinated. Scott Gottlieb, a pretty good degree of confidence. People with three doses are protected from Omicron, as I mentioned earlier. And then Francis Collins, outgoing director of the National NIH, said conspiracies are winning here, calls himself a Christian, leaving at the end of December, which is, he's going to have a lot of problems, and he's bailing. Fauci's controlling him. In RFK's book, he says, Collins answers to Fauci. He said, conspiracies are winning here. Truth is losing. That's really a serious indictment to the way in which our society seems to be traveling. Truth is supposed to be truth. And then last week, Marcus Lamb passed away at 64. He had a serious case of diabetes. Mainstream media, every article said anti-vax Christian is dead or passed or succumbed to COVID. And only a few articles had in the bottom that he also had a diabetes issue. Daystar has had a lot of people on, a lot of the doctors, Dr. McCullough, tons of doctors. They've been anti-vaccine in the agenda, and they made a big deal out of this. And that's the way they operate. And the fact is there have been five conservative voices that have lost their life this year. And, you know, I wonder sometimes, is this a setup? I don't know. I don't want to go there without facts. The real agenda behind the mad dash is to get every child on the planet injected against a virus that won't affect them. This is Leo Homan. Excellent article. He said that decades of vaccine collaboration started 1 year ago with a focus on getting those 65 and up jabbed with the new and highly experimental gene-based COVID vaccines. Now he's pushing the shot for five-year-olds while making suggestions that he would like to see them given to infants and toddlers by spring of 2022. And this is Gabby, the Vaccine Alliance. So okay, well, I'm going to go into more detail here. Frank, do you have that ready to go? Okay. Anti-Globalist Alliance, this is one man of courage, Archbishop Carlos Maria Vigano. He has talked about the one-world plan of getting Trump out of office. He was a very strong supporter of Trump and said Trump is the only one standing up against these one-world order guys, and it's critical that he gets reelected. He said that last year in a very powerful, well-written, well-spoken commentary. And now he's furious. He'd been in touch with Robert Malone. They just had an anti-vax event in Rome. And I'm going to play a 10-minute spot here. And when we come back, okay. And pray for this man. He's calling for an anti-globalist alliance. He is calling these people out. And he's talking for an alliance. This is a very, very courageous man. And we'll listen to the 10-minute spot, and then I'm going to pop into some prophecy issues, other issues. Sorry I belabored this, but I put a ton of time into this, and we have never, ever in our life seen anything like this. Well, thank you. It's covert. Thank you. It's nefarious. It's evil, and you can see the devil's top lieutenants managing this. So we'll continue to have, on the top of our website, watch.org, we'll continue to have information from top doctors, and we'll continue to follow this. I don't want to overdo it, but this is a major component to the acceleration of final day events, and the good news is this will lead up to Christ's return for us. That's the good news. So, thank you. We'll have a break.